Project. Welcome back to this Throwback Thursday. We are throwing you back to January 2016. That's right. Nearly 4 years ago. Actually, 4 years ago at this point. And we have on Mike Cashew. If you know Mike, he is one of the owners now of Working Against Gravity, one of the sponsors of the show. And we're very excited to bring this one back to life because this was our very first online podcast. So before that point, it'd all been in person. It either just been you and me, Raph. I think we maybe did like three or four together.
But computers just hit Australia at this point.
we just got the internet. We're so pumped. 2016. But since then, our relationship with Mike has obviously flourished. We met him in person at the games that year, later that year. We also met him 2019 on our US podcast tour. We went to his house, met his lovely wife, Adi, who we've had on the podcast as well. And they're just great people. You know, they're just instant people that, you know, you meet them and your energies are just the same. We just vibe straight away and you just knew that you were going to be friends for life. And that's kind of the vibe we got off this podcast. And then it was cool to see, you know, this many years later, 4 years later, that, you know, we're in the place that we are. So very pumped to be bringing this one back.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hadn't even started Working Against Gravity at this point of the show. Yeah. And now we're obviously they're a sponsor of the show and now we're tracking and all over the app.
Yeah, and like speaking of the app, what's so great about Seismic, which is Working Against Gravity's app that they use, is like I reckon my adherence to any training program, training program, coaching program, whatever it is, nutrition, it does largely depend on the convenience of the technology and how well it's integrated. And what I love, probably the number one thing I enjoy most about Seismic, their app, is that it syncs with MyFitnessPal.
Yeah.
Obviously, MyFitnessPal like owns the market when it comes to tracking nutrition. And the fact that they've obviously got all their coaching tools in their app, but they're able to, like, it would be just so clunky to have their own tracking app. Like inside of it, it's not going to be as good as MyFitnessPal. And so just seeing that sync up automatically, it's got the knowledge base in there. Like it's just awesome. And so far, yeah, I've been getting some really good results.
Yeah, no, it makes all the difference. Particularly just not having to do something totally new. But then you can also put activity before and afters, everything in there. So everybody loves to put up before and after photos and they force you to do it.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's like in the setup. Can't get to the next step unless you insert photos. Yeah, so they've thought of everything.
Yeah.
They've thought of everything. And that's the result of putting thousands of clients through their program and getting crazy results is, yeah, they've just created an app that's like perfect for their coaching program. So we're pumped about that. If you guys are thinking about doing nutrition coaching, if you've maybe failed at nutrition coaching in the past or it hasn't been the best experience or whatever, this is like the Rolls Royce of nutrition coaching experiences that we've experienced so far. So you guys can find the link in the description of this episode to join their coaching program at Working Against Gravity. And then when you check out, you can use the code MMP50 and you get $50 off your first month. Very generous offer. So check it out, guys. Here we are, our very first round with Mike Cashew. This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right. Hey, it's all good. Sounding cool. Excellent. Sounding incredible.
All right. Awesome.
And we got you on full screen now. God, he's beautiful. Look at him.
Very cool.
Not as jacked as I expected, actually.
Yeah, I think he's retired.
No? Now. I don't get that a lot. What'd you say? You think I'm retired?
Yeah.
That's very accurate.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, Mike is Mike's on the other side of the world right now, and he's our first guest that we are doing through Skype. Well, actually second, but first successful one. I'm just assuming the natural success of this podcast because we feel like we need to reach a global audience this year. And I know about Mike through the Brute Strength podcast. And for those of you who don't know what the Brute Strength podcast is, it's the podcast that grew out of the Brute Strength training program, which we get into more later. But that seems to be the, from what I understand, the training, online training system that the HaxPack team or the U CrossFit team sort of developed. Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who are you?
Where to start? I originate from Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the Dirty South. Grew up there, spent the first 17 years of my life over there. Moved to Salt Lake City when I was 17 for drug rehab originally. You know, I had drug addiction, was getting into a lot of trouble, and I kind of reached out for help. I was pushed out by my family to go and get help. I spent 18 months in like some inpatient type treatment and then got out, started going to college, And that's when I found CrossFit and met Tommy Hackenbrook. And can y'all hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. From there, we formed a team. Got, you know, that my performance what kind of skyrocketed just being around more competitive people. And that's also the time that I began coaching over there. So from there, everything took off. We won the games twice. I went after the second games, I moved back to Louisiana to start working as a coach at LSU as a strength and conditioning coach. Did that for a few months, got back surgery, which is what took me out of competing forever, and then continued working at LSU for a little bit, and then moved back to Salt Lake City to buy one of Tommy's gyms, and that's when we started Brute Strength. Me and Matt Bruce, my current business partner, had been running Bruce Barbell and training CrossFit athletes remotely in Louisiana. And then when I moved to Salt Lake City, we decided to expand it a little bit, called it Brute Strength. And that's when this whole company has started. And that was a year ago, about a year and a half ago now.
And how old are you now?
25.
So how long were you in drug rehab for, if we can start there?
Say that again.
How long were you in drug rehab for, if we can start there?
Absolutely. I was in inpatient treatment for about 18 months in a couple different programs. I went to a wilderness therapy program where you know, they just threw me out into the desert with 20 other kids my age and let me withdraw out there, that whole thing, and just kind of get away from
Was there a gym out there?
What's that?
Was there a gym in this rehab program?
No, I lived in the desert for 9 weeks. So that was the first part. And then I was in an inpatient treatment facility for another number of months where I could go to school at my own pace and do that on my own. But most of the day was just therapy, group therapy, individual therapy, different like homework type exercises, AA meetings, meditation. You know, my life revolved around recovery for that amount of time. And then when I got out of there, I went to a halfway house kind of thing. And for the next 3 or 4 years, the most important thing in my life was that recovery for sure. And that, you know, in that time I found CrossFit, fell in love with it. And I was also going to school, but the most important thing was going to AA meetings, sponsoring, you know, young men, helping them to recover as well, that kind of thing. That's just what I needed at the time.
Yeah. I've often heard with those, AA places and drug recovery and that, that it's quite unsuccessful, or people get stuck in the loop of AAs and or whatever the version of it might be. What do you think set you apart, and like, how do you think you were able to progress out of, you know, essentially what seems like a lifetime of stuck in a vicious cycle, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, and I'm sure there's more research out now, but 12-step. The 12-step type model has one of the highest success rates of all types of recovery. With that said, I want to say as of like 5 years ago, it was still like 7 to 10% of people recover. What set me apart? You know, I think my parents caught it early enough which led to a lot of things. I didn't create enough damage and destruction in my life. I didn't rewire my brain enough. You know, I think the longer an individual goes on using and using that as using drugs and alcohol as a coping mechanism, the more messed up their brain gets. And I was only 17 years old. So that process hadn't gone too far down that path. I had a lot of luck. You know, my parents were an incredible, incredible support system. They were then, they were in while I was going through the rehab process, and they continued to be today. I came across some incredible therapists that, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy, pretty charismatic, and in the past I was able to kind of fool people, including my parents and other authority figures. And these therapists just saw right through my bullshit and, you know, called me out day after day after day, whether it be, you know, how I was feeling, maybe I was just not being authentic, or, you know, lying about kind of my experiences using drugs, trying to minimize or otherwise. You know, they just put me in my place, and they earned my respect, right? I grew to respect these people, look up to them, and whereas before I looked up to, you know, the baddest kids, the coolest kids. I always wanted to be cool. That was the thing. And so I started to look up to these therapists, and just people that were just different people, you know, and that was the start of it. I don't think I'm special in any way as far as like my whole recovery process. I think a lot of it had to do with luck and the people that I had, you know, in my corner per se. I also had a long, long time to be removed from my environment and to like just think about the rest of my life, if you will.
And speaking of the rest of your life, what sort of athletic background did you have before CrossFit?
I played sports from, you know, as far as I can remember. I was playing baseball, I was playing soccer. You know, by the time I was like 9 or 10, I was playing football as well. My football coach, the high school football coach, introduced me to weightlifting when I was in the 7th grade. He walked up to me. I don't know what I was doing. I was probably just working out by myself in the gym. And I remember this coach Weiner walks into the weight room and he says, "Hey, you ever done snatch and clean and jerk before?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, you want to compete this weekend." So that's when I started weightlifting as well. Just played a lot of sports. I was always playing at least one sport at all times throughout the year, until I left, in 2008.
And what were the other sporting backgrounds of the other people on the CrossFit team?
All 5 of them were D1 athletes. Tommy was the defensive captain for the University of Utah. They went to the Fiesta Bowl. He ended up playing further in the Canadian League. Adrian Conway played at Weber State. He was a halfback, and I think he had a lot of injuries, which probably kept him from going to the next level as well. Taylor Richards Lindsay was a basketball player at Utah State, and I think there was some talk about her going on to the WNBA. I can't remember for sure. Aaron Binion played soccer at least for a couple years at the university level, and then Mary Lampas played soccer at Purdue. And even when we were competing, even honestly 3 weeks before the games, she would play 3 or 4 indoor soccer games per week, and this is on top of 4 hours of training. So she's a fucking freak, she continues to do so.
Yeah, nice. That sounds good. Yeah. We're getting a little bit of feedback, I think. I can hear myself through you. Maybe okay. I'm too loud coming through your speakers.
Oh, okay. Let me see. I got to put this on then. All right, cool.
All right, awesome. Yeah, much better. So, so that was sort of a brief history of the team. And I think if anyone thinks of you CrossFit, they obviously think of Tommy Hackenbruch. So how did you originally, you know, step into his gym and meet him? Like, what was the story behind you and Tommy's love affair?
Mm-hmm. Tommy and I met. I was going to a gym called CrossFit NRG originally, and I think I had been there for 6 months, maybe 9 months, and I did a local competition that Tommy put on. I had heard of Tommy, and I had heard of the CrossFit games and stuff, but this was in 2010 maybe, so it wasn't nearly as big as it is now. So I really didn't know anything about CrossFit competition. So I didn't really know how big of a deal he was in the community at that time. So anyway, I go to this competition. I'm in the lead for the most of the day, beating Tommy. and I like to think that made him notice me a little bit more, because at the end of the day, he ends up beating me pretty badly. There's some strength events and stuff like that, and he destroys me. But at the end of the day, he comes up to me and introduces himself and invites me to go to his gym to form a team, basically. That was the start of it. And at the time, again, like I didn't know about the CrossFit Games or anything like that. The idea of switching to another gym was like switching to another family. And so it was actually kind of a hard decision. I knew I wanted to do it. I knew if I wanted to get better, I had to train with people better than me. So pretty quickly I made that decision and started training over there full time. And that year we formed another team that went to the games and placed ninth. And it wasn't until the following year that Tommy, Adrian, all those guys joined the team.
Oh, awesome. And so as I guess as he was a bit of a mentor to you, he's a little bit older than you, I think. Mm-hmm. Tommy's like in his 30s or something now. He's got some kids.
33 going on 34.
Yeah, so I guess he'd definitely be in a mentor role for you. So I guess what's that like having someone that's, a teammate firstly, but also like a, you know, a mentor and like a business owner and a leader somewhat? Like, what mm-hmm. are some of the things that you've learned from him?
That's a good question. I am constantly looking for people to kind of draw inspiration from and look up to as a role model. And so I definitely looked at Tommy as that kind of guy when I met him. Right off the bat, I learned hard work from him. The guy in the gym has just an incredible, incredible work ethic. And never complains, literally never complains. We did Seal Fit together, and that was probably a time that just showed me what he's really made of in the deepest part of his being. It was the hardest physical weekend of my life, and he was able to just thrive in that environment, smile, lift other people. And, it just kind of showed me how powerful of a human being he is, how powerful of a leader he is. And it's definitely contagious. You know, if I just saw him as a normal human being, and I knew that I can kind of draw from that. I can be like that too in a capacity. So he kind of gave me permission to be a little bit stronger, be a little bit more of a leader.
What is the feed like after Seal Fit? Do you just go to like, what do they have? What's the place to go, Raph?
I thought that they organized like a thing where you ate heaps of food and then they made you do one more thing where you think it's over and then you go and get like pancakes. And then they make you throw up.
Yeah. Did that happen to you?
Oh, okay. So... It starts on Friday.
All the throwing up and shitting yourself. I remember.
Yeah, it starts on Friday afternoon. You go to Saturday, and then you don't go to sleep. You go to Sunday, probably about 6 a.m. because this restaurant is open, and they take you to get this enormous spread of food, pancakes, like you're saying, these huge pancakes, pancakes, sausage, all this kind of stuff. And then I want to say you leave that place, you jog back over to Seal Fit, which is like probably 800 meters. Maybe you get 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and then you have 4 or 5 more hours, left of the, course. So I don't know that, you know, that one ranks pretty low in terms of like severity of things they do, but you know, that's uncomfortable. That's definitely very uncomfortable.
So give us the top two uncomfortable experiences in as much detail as possible.
That's a really good question, and I really think it's different for everyone.
Okay, what was it for you?
For me, And something you might not know, and I just posted this to Instagram a couple of days ago. The first time when the whole team did it, I quit. It was right before the restaurant that time. So
didn't make that mistake twice.
What's that?
Didn't make that mistake twice.
Right. So the hardest part for me both times was this nighttime ruck. I want to say 12, 13 miles round trip. So six or seven straight up and then down. And you've already gone, a day without sleeping. You've already done, at that point, that was already the most physically challenging thing I've ever done in my life. And then just the long, slow stuff gave me enough time to commiserate and just really get in my head. And kind of the theme of that time, in comparison to the second time I did it, yeah, was I kind of retreated into myself and didn't ask for help. I wasn't really vocal, and I'm naturally kind of a leader. I want to take charge. I want to be in the front. That's just where I feel most comfortable. And that's not the way that it was set up. Like they set up two different leaders at the beginning of the week. And I just, from the get-go, I just kind of, I always felt a step behind, and I was always in my head. So we get to that ruck, and I'm just literally miserable, and I've never felt like this way in my entire life. I always was about the most conditioned person in all the sports I played. I was always a weight room warrior. I just loved working hard. So it was a really foreign place for me to be. We get up there. I have cuts all over my back just from the ruck, just rubbing into my skin, shoulders, back. My feet are just fucked, just completely blistered, opened up, all that kind of stuff.
Jesus.
And I'm just throwing myself a pity party. I've got one foot out the door. I don't think I've said to myself, hey, I might quit yet. I really can't remember. But I was definitely, I definitely had one foot out the door. I wasn't giving my full effort. I was just always operating from a point of defeat. And so that goes on for a couple hours, and the idea comes to me, like, I just can't take it. I'm holding everyone back. I'm hurting more than everyone else. That was the key that did it. Before we left to go to San Diego, I had stayed up all night. I didn't go to sleep because I was working on a school project. And so I used that as an excuse. I didn't tell anyone about it, but in my own head, that was my excuse. I'm way more tired than everyone else. And I was having a hard time, like, keeping my eyes open as we're walking up this thing. So I'm just throwing a huge pity party for myself. And we get up there. It's pitch black. I have no idea when we're going to be done. And so we reach the truck to refill the water bottles, and I just take my thing off, and I'm like, I'm fucking done. I don't even talk to anyone. Tommy comes over. He says, you're not done. There's no way. All my team is urging me not to do it. I'm going to regret it. And once I make my mind up on something, I'm really, really stubborn. So I didn't even listen to them. I kind of just shut down, got in the truck, and, immediately fucking waterworks. I fell apart. Instant disappointment, it was a really, really powerful experience for me. And I woke up the next day and, signed up for it again, like 9 months later or something, which I completed after we won the games the second time. The second thing was just the element of not going to sleep. I do not do well on little sleep. At that time, I was probably sleeping 9 hours a night, because that's what our coach told us we needed to do. So to get no hours a night was a drastic difference, and I did not do well with that. It just added to me feeling weak and feeling sorry for myself.
That was one hell of a story. That was awesome.
Do they, on the Silver, do they tempt you to quit the whole time? Are they like, oh, you can just jump in this truck, go home?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. They're not like cursing at you or anything, but they're definitely tempting you, you know, saying you're not doing well, saying you're weak, all this kind of stuff, saying you're bringing the whole team down. You can end it, just get in the truck right now, all that kind of stuff for sure.
What is the recovery like after, like, it's quite obviously traumatic staying up that late and like not eating food and obviously all the blisters and cuts you said, infections and stuff. So what sort of recovery is it after that sort of event?
A lot of people I've heard cannot wear shoes for about a week. I wore sandals for about a week or two after. Your feet just swell up from just being on them and running with a ruck for hours and hours. The blisters last two or three weeks. I'm trying to think. I'll tell you this. So my back, I found out after we won the first time, I found out that a condition I already had was like way worse and that I would probably have to have surgery one day or just completely stop lifting, period. And so I go to the games again because we were already like in the middle of the season. I didn't want to let the team down and I also wanted to be a part of it. But anyway, I go to Seal Fit a week after that, after the second games, and I get done with it. The whole time it's fine because there's blood flowing through there the entire time. But I go to sleep that night and I wake up the next morning and I literally am afraid to get on the floor to stretch because I'm afraid I won't get back up. It was that bad. I had to drag my bags to the taxi and I had to get wheelchaired around in the airport. I could barely move. It was that right there was the most physical pain I've ever been in. And it wasn't because of Seal Fit. It was because I had this really bad back condition and I did Seal Fit while I had that, but I got it fixed and it's 100% now.
What is the condition? And you mentioned it stopped you all training forever now. Like, I don't know, is that an exaggeration or like, what does it actually entail?
It's called spondylolisthesis and it's basically just an instability in the spine. And I had back spasms as a 13-year-old and it really didn't progress until, honestly, I started low bar back squatting, in addition to all the other training I was doing. And in a matter of 90 days, it got significantly worse. For the first time in 10 years, I had a noticeable difference. And when I went to the x-rays, it was just, it was an incredibly different scenario than when I was 13. And I saw seven specialists, like surgeons, and every one of them was astounded that I was even walking. But it was because I was lifting and I was so strong that, you know, I think any CrossFitter would be, or weightlifter would, you know, would kind of be in the same situation. But yeah, it was really bad. As far as my training now, it's a choice not to compete anymore. I do CrossFit, I do weightlifting, all that stuff, but the volume is what I stay away from. I basically have fused vertebrae. So where, you know, force used to be dispersed over X amount of vertebrae, now it's dispersed over less. So your spine is already going to deteriorate. Mine is going to deteriorate just a little bit faster. So if I'm doing high volume training, high training volume of CrossFit, weightlifting, whatever, then I'm putting a lot of extra stress on that, on my spine, and it's just not worth it to me anymore. Even if I could go win the games again, it's just not worth it, that chance.
Yeah. So speaking of winning the games, what was the, can you just take us through the first season? Now we have a lot of listeners that have competed at regionals and people that have gone team, and we're in that boat as well. And we had some, you know, really long training weeks, you know, leading into regionals in the open. A year ago, there were 11 sessions, you know, training weeks of up to 22, 25 hours on the gym floor. I'm sure you can relate to those sort of things. What did it look like for Hackspack? Or was it low volume? Was it individualized for everyone? Was it a sort of a group program? How did you guys go about it?
that first year, we did the same exact thing. Unless, you know, some of us would just get an extra workout in every now and then, but that was just on our own accord. We had the same program given to us by Rob McDonald at Jim Jones in Salt Lake City. And it was, compared to, I think, what everyone was doing at the time, very high volume. It was about 20, 25 hours a week. And he was also having us do ice baths two or three times a week, mandatory massages, all that kind of stuff. So it felt like a very high amount of work overall. We got together Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays at a minimum and worked out all six of us. And those training sessions were just absolutely incredible. The intensity of those sessions were incredible. A lot of times Rob would actually come over to train us in what we call our interval weight training sessions, it's just a bunch of intervals. So just very, very painful stuff. But we went harder than ever when he was around. Just we respected him so much that we just went harder when he was around. That's generally what our training was like.
So Rob McDonald, I've heard a podcast with him, is that he's a Jim Jones guy, and we've had Alexa Towsby on the podcast before. Was there any of that sort of like, he does some things to like get you out of your comfort zone, like 10-minute calorie Edine tests, like by yourself in front of everyone? Was there some of that stuff for team building?
I'm trying to think, because I've been around Rob and Jim Jones for a long time, and so I'm trying to discern what was team stuff and just Jim Jones stuff. He exposed us to a lot of like single movement mind fucks, as he would call it, where we would just have say 100 deadlifts at 100 fat bar deadlifts at X amount of weight. And that's the only workout, right? So the idea is it's just like a long row or a ruck. It's just one movement. There's no way around it. You have to just do X amount of reps. It gives you more time to think about how much pain you're in, commiserate, whatever. So we did a lot of that kind of stuff. We did some all-out efforts on the rower, Airdyne, stuff like that. And those were actually the worst things I've ever done, acutely, right? A 60-second Airdyne test is atrocious if you go all out. I've nearly blacked out a couple of times. So he definitely knows how to challenge people mentally in a million different ways.
Yeah, and on that, do you feel like that it seems like the environment, well, so far you didn't even mention like the stuff that was in the program necessarily, like the specifics of energy systems or strength training cycles or whatever. It seems like you guys put the emphasis on the environment and the intensity and the mental side of it. Is that true? Is that what you guys focus on more? Do you think it's more important than what's written on the piece of paper?
Times 10. Times 10. You know, if it's a good strength and conditioning coach, if it's a good CrossFit coach, whatever, and they know what they're doing and the program is coming from some research and experience, stuff like that. It's not just coming shoot from the hip kind of thing. They're all very similar. Everybody's going to be snatching, cleaning, doing muscle ups, doing Metcons. Nowadays, everybody's doing, you know, low, slow aerobic base work. They're doing intervals. Everybody's doing a lot of the same stuff. What really makes the biggest difference is your training partners, that training environment, how well you recover, how well you can remove other stress from your life, because you have a ton of training stress. How much other stress from relationships, food, all that kind of stuff are coming in. So I think those are the things that make the biggest difference, honestly. And we did a phenomenal job of that. At the time, for me personally, I was in college and it was challenging, but I could just do my schoolwork, go to school and just completely forget about it. It never stressed me out. I slept 9 hours a day. I ate really, really well. So I was able to maximize kind of my growth in that period. And I think that was true for all of us. And when we got together, we felt like we were family because we did so many things outside of the gym together. Mm. So we joked around a lot and stuff like that. But when it came time to actually lift or do any kind of actual workout, it was business. We were really, really focused. We held each other accountable. It wasn't a lot of joking in the middle of a workout. We were very serious about getting better. And I think a lot of people are like that, but I think it's hard to find a group of six that continue that for a long period of time. I think a lot of people will have a good training session here or there. And for a number of reasons, we were able to do that for years. We just took it really seriously and it worked out for us.
Did you ever feel burnt out at any point in the season? Besides that moment in Seal Fit climbing the mountain?
I didn't. And if we had gave our best and lost, maybe I would feel differently, but it was so gratifying standing on the podium. And as soon as we were done, I remember the first year we went to the games, and we got ninth. I came back the next probably 2 days later after the games. And I remember trying one of the individual workouts, the clean and, rope climb one.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And I think I sprained my wrist and I was out for 4 weeks. So I was hungry. I was very hungry. And we were always, all of us were hungry all year long. After the games, both years, we would take a couple months off in terms of training together hard. But we were all still in the gym doing our own thing for sure.
So, what do those couple months off look like? Is it just training three hours a week, or is it just yoga and Pilates, or mm-hmm. What does it look like?
It's different for everyone. Tommy and Mary would, I think, just kind of be sick of exercising. So they would, Tommy is just active doing, being a dad, building stuff. He does a lot of the framing and stuff like that at his gyms. Mary would probably just do a few classes a week, CrossFit classes a week, and then just play soccer all the time. The rest of us would just do our own thing. I would work on strength all the time. I would get on a different strength program, do that myself, do whatever Metcons I heard were fun, stuff like that. So kind of a mixture, whatever we were feeling like. We didn't have any structured off season.
So was the first and second season, the first season we described where you won the games, was that the same leading into the second season where you won the games, or did you change the programming up? Did you still all do the same program and train together with Rob, or did you mix things up a little bit? Did you take a different approach? In the second season before
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we used the same programming the entire time I was at U CrossFit.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yep.
Don't fix what isn't broke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Tommy had done really well at the games. I forget what he got in 2011. Anyway, he did really well. And so that proved that it was a good system. And then we won the second, the next year we won. So there was definitely no reason to change that.
And besides being on the podium, what were the two highlights from either of the games victories that you won? I know Tommy Hackenbrock did Karen Unbroken at the end of that 1 year, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously that's pretty dope. But what for you, what were some highlights? Either witnessing or being a part of, I suppose.
It's a good question.
where you took
and
the
it could be just in those 2 years in that period you're talking about, or, just at the competition,
or at the CrossFit Games,
at the CrossFit Games,
At the Games.
I mean the girls event in 2012 was the most exciting event I've ever been a part of. We were ahead by over 100 points, and they said they were wiping the slate clean, and we were furious. But there was nothing we could do about it. So, we were, at least I was scared, I was about to do Diane, a lot of handstand pushups. I was terrified of letting everyone down, and, we ended up winning it. And that was just the best feeling, even if that workout stood alone, that would have been really exciting because everyone started from zero. That was a good one. The second year, I think the first event was one where we all ran a couple miles, flipped the pig, and then carried this thing. And I kind of remember feeling like we didn't get any respect for winning the first year, and no one was talking about us, and we kind of wanted to come out and make a statement. And we came out and won that event. And it was just really fun. It challenged all of us. And it gave us a chance to prove that we're still really good.
And did you have, those are the high moments. Did you have any low moments like in Seal Fit where you're like, I guess you guys were fucking winning the whole time, but was there any moments where you were like, guys, take the log. I can't go on, please. I'm quitting. Was there anything like that? Or did you just crush it the whole time?
As far as the competitions, we always did really well, but in training, obviously Seal Fit was devastating. I was embarrassed, all of that kind of stuff, but they were super supportive of me, and it still really brought us together. So it was still a really positive thing. For sure the biggest, the worst thing that happened in those couple years was when I found out about my back. So I go, it was, I want to say the fourth week of the Open. I found out that it was, what they would classify, I think, as a level 3 or 4 out of 5, which is really, really bad. And I went to see this specialist in New Orleans who had worked with the Saints. So he worked with a lot of athletes, the New Orleans Saints. He worked with a lot of athletes. He knows his shit. And he told me I should be done with CrossFit immediately. And I was devastated. Like I already told you, I was just devastated. And I go, I'm hanging on to hope that this other surgeon in Utah is going to tell me that I can compete. And this is the day, this is Friday. Right. And I'm coaching at Southern Utah University, and I'm going to drive to Salt Lake City, 4 hours away, to go see this surgeon the next day. And if he says I'm good, then I'm going to do the fifth Open workout, and I'm going to compete that year. I start driving and my engine blows up. I had forgotten to put oil in there, and the engine blows up, and I'm 3 hours away, and it's 9 PM. And I was like, there's just no chance I'm going to be able to make it to this doctor's appointment the next day. So I just kind of, I go to a gas station. I get a taxi to bring me to a gas station. I get drunk. I'm just like, I'm feeling sorry for myself. I got a couple tall beers and I get drunk. One of my buddies came all the way out. Adam Picari drives all the way out to come pick me up with his truck and his trailer. And he brought three friends. And then we drive all the way to Salt Lake City, probably get there at 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. I go to the doctor. He tells me I potentially can. It's not going to do any more damage than is already done. So I can. He said my back condition is terrible, but it's not going to do any more damage. So then I go and do the Open workout. you know? But yeah, that night I was pretty sad and stuff, but it all worked out. I don't, you know, either way, I had the surgery and it ended up, I'm 100% healthy, and I'm very grateful for that.
I have a question about how you guys structure the season. So yep. I guess the focus was everyone was going team that year. What did the team situation look like through the Open, before the Open, and then going into the game season? Did you like take the Open seriously? Did you train all the way through it?
We did not take the Open very seriously at all. And in fact, I forget when the 7 minutes of burpees came out, we were all destroyed. We all did what we thought was pretty terribly, cause we were just under conditioned. We just didn't prepare for it. And at the time it worked. We still, you know, we might've even won the Open in our region or something like that. But, so at the time that was fine. Now I do not think that is okay at all, but that's beside the point. So we would train through the Open. We were only supposed to do each workout one time. On occasion, we would do some of them twice, but we were not supposed to deviate from our training at all to do so. If, you know, if we wanted to do it twice, that had to be an addition to what we were already supposed to do. So we would usually have a normal week up to Thursday, kind of rest Friday, do the workout Friday night, and then have a team training session the next morning. And that would go all the way through the Open. And then between then and regionals, or really then and the games, the training, the schedule was the same. It was a double day, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, active recovery. And those days were also double days, but it was just a lot of like light kind of accessory lifting, aerobic base work, jogging, you know, really light stuff, but a couple hours. And then Saturday was like a 4-hour session, like just a bunch of team shit. And that was mostly just Tommy coming up with the most random shit, coming up with things that he thought we might see at the games. And we did that for a long time. And, you know, some of the stuff we prepared for in there ended up coming up. We did a lot of like log PT and stuff like that.
He fucking knew it.
Inside word.
Yeah.
All work.
Inside word. He works for HG.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So if we transition a little bit out of, obviously you took a lot of experience from those competitive years, and it seems now you've transitioned more into a coach's role, writing the Brute Strength program. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Brute Strength program is and how you kind of came up with it, like where it came from?
Yeah, so I started to tell you that I was working with Matt Bruce. If you don't know Matt, he is a retired weightlifter from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and he was a 7-time world team member for the United States. One of the fastest Americans in the last decade or so. And I met him because I went to his coach, Gail Hatch, who is a legend in American weightlifting.
The Hatch squat?
Hatch, yeah, exactly. That guy. Yeah, so I went in to learn from Hatch, ended up meeting Matt. And when I moved back to go work at LSU, like I told you guys, we linked up, started programming. I let him do, you know, I would say, so I started basically kind of mimicking the way I was trained. I would write these programs pretty, you know, I would lay them out like that. And then I would say, hey, Matt, I want you to put some weightlifting stuff here, 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 and here. Right. So then it was a CrossFit guy and it was a weightlifting guy. And, you know, I started to look at gymnasticsbodies.com and some different like gymnastics sources to learn about that, you know, trying to figure out how I can get kind of the more general population better at gymnastics faster. And so, you know, I was putting all of that stuff together myself. Me and Matt held a little free seminar in Baton Rouge, and I look over at some point in the seminar, it's more like a clinic. We're not like, yeah, we're not charging anything or anything. And I look over and this guy is teaching someone muscle ups that I've never met before. And I like just stood there for a second. and realized he was super smart. He was very articulate, and he was explaining how to do a muscle up better than I have ever explained it. And that guy was Nick Sorrell, and we basically just invited him to be a part of Bruce Barbell at that point. And he, since then, he's been the Bruce Barbell and then now Brute Strength gymnastics coach. When I moved back to Salt Lake City, Tommy said, "Hey, I know you're doing this thing with Bruce Barbell. If you want to use like my resources, people are always like asking me where to go for training, stuff like that. I'd love to be able to tell them somewhere to go." And that's when we decided, hey, we're going to create a new company. And Matt Bruce came up with Brute Strength, because it is Matt Bruce, BR, and Ute for Ute CrossFit, Brute.
Fucking genius.
Right? excuse me. So we already had the three of us. And then we had Tommy as well to contribute to the CrossFit side. Also, right before I moved back to Salt Lake City, I started training NorCal CrossFit, and Chris Henshaw was their endurance coach. And I started just talking with Chris Henshaw on the phone, because I looked at, you know, I looked at their endurance training and I was just fucking blown away by the stuff that I didn't know. I didn't understand what he was doing. I understood that they were getting much, much better in their endurance, and I wanted to understand why. So we started to have conversations, and I was just like, damn, this guy is really cool. I would love to learn from him to add to what we're doing already. And then when we got to the games, I'm not really sure what sparked the idea, but I said, That's when the idea to have an expert in everything kind of came about, when we were at the games that year, the year after I had retired. And I just asked him, hey, you know, we already have these guys involved. I'd love to kind of start this bigger project where we just find the best of everything and we make a program together for people. And he was fired up, and every time him and I talk about this thing, he's just still so fired up. The guy loves endurance training, and he loves, you know, he loves working with athletes. So that was huge. From there, we brought on Sean Pastuch and Jeremy Todd, who live in New York City or Long Island. They're two chiropractors, and they have a system that, you know, works with athletes on mobility, injury prevention, movement patterns, stuff like that, and fixes asymmetries. Who else?
Oh my God, there's more. It's so dense.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of coaches. We've got Jacob Hutton and Adrian Conway. Jake is probably the best strength and conditioning coach overall that I've ever met. You know, honestly, at this point, we haven't even started to use the full capacities of Jake's mind. Like he really, really knows how to get people bigger, faster, stronger. So hopefully one day we'll be able to use more of his knowledge, but that's another guy on our team. And then Adrian, obviously. And then just recently we brought on a guy named Nick Fowler, who is going to be a very integral part of our company. He's going to be the kind of the director of strength and conditioning. And I'm going to be more so on the business side. So he comes from Training Think Tank, which is owned by Max Elhag. And those guys are fucking smart. They're very, very smart. And you know, we've kind of gotten to the point where I feel like, you know, this thing has always been about providing the best program for athletes possible. And I think it's beyond my scope now. And I want to give our athletes the absolute best. So I want the absolute best to be involved. And I think Nick is going to be a good guy to kind of drive this train.
How many athletes are on the Brute Strength program?
On all of the different ones, between 700 and 800.
Jeez, that's heaps. Cool. Yeah, and like, what do you think it is that really is like? Well, obviously, I kind of got an understanding already, but like, when you are programming like a general group program, like for example, Raf and I followed the training plan, which I'm sure you're familiar with, the Army's program.
It's probably, absolutely.
Yeah, it's probably one of the biggest group programs that's circulating in our community. As well as yours and a couple others, you know. What is it that, you know, because eventually people find that they need something that's a little more individualized, at least to a certain point, which is why people go and do their own thing a little bit. How do you think you kind of solve that issue a little bit with the brute? Like, how's it different?
It's a really good question. A couple different ways. Our gymnastics program is laid out a lot like the gymnastics bodies program. That's something that we looked at and said, you know, we want to make something like this. And if you haven't looked at it, it's they are based on artistic gymnastics, which are which is a subjective sport. So, you know, we started to put this thing together, and we noticed we were doing a lot of things that were just like fundamental gymnastics that might not transfer over to CrossFit. And so Nick developed an entire 1 through 20 level system that includes fundamental gymnastics, CrossFit specific drills, gymnastic mobility, all that kind of stuff. And it progresses from very, very simple to very, very advanced, to the point where level 20 is things that we're not even seeing in CrossFit yet. So most people will never complete all of these levels. We have a D1 gymnast. We have a couple D1 gymnasts on the program that have not yet gotten past level 13. So that program you go through at your own pace, right? Mm-hmm. So in our software, at the bottom of the page is the gymnastics portion for the day. And it says, there's a button that says, I have mastered this. And when you have mastered every exercise for every level, then you click, I have mastered this, and you move on to the next. So whether you're training with a team or you're in one of our small groups, you're still going through that program at your own pace. And, you know, if we look at like the education system or whatever, the fastest way to learn is at your own pace. So, that's one way we individualize it. Another way is the system that Chris Henshaw has created, to the point where we have our endurance workouts planned out. And so, and a lot of people are doing the same workouts, but they get their own paces for every single workout. So if you're training something like lactate threshold, then it's very important that you have your own paces. You can't just say go as hard as you can every time, right? That's not how it works. So the way his system is set up, it allows for people to get their own paces for every single interval of every single workout. On top of that, we give people access to the coaches 24/7 on Facebook and through a weekly check-in. So in essence, we like to think people are getting the same attention they might get through like a 100% individualized program on our program. They can have access to a coach all day, where a lot of programs that you're paying $300 to $500 a month, you don't get access all day. We give you access all day, as well as a structured check-in once a week. And video analysis is also done in that Facebook group. So, you know, if we grow to 2,500 members, we may have to change it around a little bit. We may have to create different Facebook groups, but I don't see any reason why this model won't continue to work for people.
And do you have games athletes on the program, like, as well? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So you're like everyone.
Yep. Yeah, so we have two different programs. We have Games Prep, which is, you know, how we train Brooke Entz, Adrian Conway, et cetera. And that is very high volume. And then we have Brute Compete, which is for everyone else. And that is quickly becoming our most popular program. And that's 60 to 90 minutes a day.
Are you allowed to be on the Brute Games one if you're not a games athlete? Do people sneak on there?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The vast majority... the vast majority, and that's just a name. That's just a name. A lot of probably 80% of those people will never even make it to regionals, and that's okay. They want, the way we put it is, this is the absolute fastest way to progress if you have the time to complete it. So these are just people with the time to complete it. They may never go to regionals, but I think they're going to get better a lot faster than they would on any other program.
And do you handle any of these athletes on the program face-to-face, like on a daily basis?
Brooke Entz right now, because I live in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
But other than that, no, I don't see many of our athletes very often.
Okay, so your day involves just working on the Brute program. So you don't, you said you opened the gym for Tommy. You don't do that anymore?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so it just didn't end up happening. He gave me the option to come in,
right?
And I was there for a few months, decided not to, and then didn't buy the gym.
And is that
So my sole focus is Brute strength.
Okay,
to answer your question.
So you're a little, you could describe your work as being a desk jockey a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. How much time do you spend doing programs or writing programs?
Actually, doing programs, not very much, because I only work with our sponsored athletes and a couple, like, one-on-one clients that I've chosen to take on.
Right.
Our system is run now by Jake Hutton and Adrian Conway, and like they put together a lot of like the skeletons of the programs, but our experts are filling in the blanks, right? So that's just the way we set it up from the beginning, and that's worked for that long.
Yeah, nice. Was that the team that was Haxpack this year? Was it Haxpack? Yeah, they call him Haxpack.
Yeah,
Hack was on it. Yeah,
yeah.
He was following you. The whole team was following the Brute program.
Yes, for the most part, and then
that's why they didn't make it. For the most part,
what's that?
Did they not make it because not all of them were following it?
I like to think so. I'm totally kidding. For the most part, and then, you know, basically Tommy would throw in some extra stuff that he thought individuals on the team needed to be working on, especially on those Saturday sessions. So we don't program, in general, we don't program team workouts unless one of our coaches is working with a team. So for the general population of our athletes, you know, there's no reason to write a team program. So he would just create those for himself.
It seems to me like on a program like this, because you have so many experts, do you find that most of the program is really split up on what you're working on? So the conditioning is like very monostructural, and then the gymnastics is like very gymnastics.
Very pure.
And then there isn't much, like combining of everything. So like you could do your hinge or intervals, I presume, with dumbbell snatches and double unders as well. But because you have individual coaches riding it, everything gets split up, and the amount of just like triplets and general CrossFit workouts is minimized?
That's a good question. It's more so than I think most other programs, but it's CrossFit, and we have to be ready for CrossFit type workouts. So we're still doing Metcons. We're still doing like EMOMs with CrossFit movements in them, just like everyone else. But yes, we definitely have more pure endurance sessions than I think most programs do. Surely more pure gymnastics work. But as far as everybody's doing long weightlifting sessions now, I feel like, stuff like that. So I think it's still similar in a lot of ways, but yeah, I think a little bit more so than other programs.
And for most athletes, that join the program, I guess it's hard to say once they obviously join your program, it's hard to know their history and stuff unless you do like a really deep assessment. What do you feel like the things are when they get on the program? They're like, oh, well, I've never done this before. And then you see immediate benefit. Is it like the pure gymnastics or what do you think is something that your program has that most are missing that people benefit from?
Number one, I don't want to get hit in the face later, so I'm going to say it's a two-way tie between the gymnastics and the endurance. I think people after doing those pure endurance workouts are just blown away by their recovery time, how much better they feel in longer Metcon, stuff like that. They notice a very quick change, improvement, and as well as the gymnastics program. People are blown away by how good their technique is very quickly, how much easier movements feel in the middle of Metcons, and then how they're able to do more advanced stuff really quickly, whereas before they weren't even close, like handstand walking or something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, awesome.
And these are, so if you have the hinge jaw intervals, that sort of stuff, do you prescribe most people get it all done in one session? Is it like, does it matter very much?
The hinge, like one workout?
Yeah, just because like what I find is that when you're training once a day, fitting in longer intervals like is difficult in that sort of training format.
Well, I mean, once you start the endurance workout, yes, we definitely suggest you finish that entire workout. But if your question is like, if there's like lifting and a Metcon first, is that?
Yeah, I mean, like putting all this stuff together because it all quite split up. You know, you don't really want to go for your snatches and stuff after you've done 40 minutes of rowing.
Sure, for most people, I would agree. but yes, yeah, so for the vast majority of people, we want you to, just like you would learn in a exercise science book, we want you power and strength, auxiliary lifting, maybe like some speed type stuff. And then at the bottom is your conditioning. So that's the way we lay out every single day, unless you're bookends, then you're probably going to do your endurance first. But we also recommend, you know, 3 or 4 hours of rest in between these hard sessions. So you still want to be fresh as possible for your endurance session. Yeah.
One thing I had a question about is like in those 3 to 4 hours, you know, one tough thing I found when we were doing it last year was the supplementation and the nutrition. Like it's tough because you don't want to have something too heavy that's going to take 4 or 5 hours to digest. Like you're not going to have steak and potatoes necessarily. If you've got to go and do, you know, another Metcon hours later, what do you generally recommend? I'm sure you get nutrition questions all the time through the forums and stuff. How do you handle that specific time period between sessions? What's your general recommendation?
I think it's all, it needs to be done through, figured out through trial and error, and everyone is different. I could personally eat a huge meal an hour before a big workout and be completely fine. Some people have a banana an hour before and they throw up. You know, I think it's all different. But in terms of supplementation, I think every athlete needs to be on creatine. Other than that, if you're not sticking to a certain diet for, let's say 8 weeks and really sticking to it, then you don't even need to worry about supplementation. And the vast majority of athletes have no idea what they're putting in their body. So they have no business putting in these things that are going to add 0.01 when they're missing the low hanging fruit. So yeah, I would tell most people, go talk to Chrissy Mae Cagney or Dee Zucker and get some real nutrition advice.
What's that?
Oh, it's his girlfriend's company. Yeah.
Well, no, Chrissy is Brute Nutrition.
Oh,
so.
Okay, sorry.
Is that like
No, AD was on the podcast.
Yeah, I think I know it.
Yeah, it's Working Against Gravity. Yeah. It's the Catalyst Athletics guys do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good. They're like our flexible dieting.
Yeah, we have seen this. We have talked about this in the podcast.
Yeah, we've had a flexible dieting expert on our podcast as well. It's something we follow as well. Yeah. It's definitely important.
The best.
I mean,
we follow it on weekdays, I'd say.
Yeah, we follow when it's convenient.
Yeah.
But we have, it just only takes a few weeks to kind of like familiarize yourself with it. And then you have like that intuition going into the rest of your life. You don't need to be like
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
A per gram.
Yeah. So we give all Brute athletes, I forget the percentage. Basically it's $65 a month for nutrition coaching, which is stupid cheap. And Chrissy is a phenomenal coach. We've got a lot of our athletes on that as well, which helps them out really quickly.
Yeah.
Figure out what they're, you know, what they need to be eating.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, we covered a lot of bases. So, Mike, we got some more personal stuff now. We always end our podcast with 3 questions, for our guests. So our first question to you is, what is something that you incorporate in your day, every day, and you don't go without fail. So it might be a full routine or something small, like what did we have on yesterday? We had like making the bed or something like that.
Yeah, every morning.
Yeah, like what is something, a part of your routine that you do every day?
Well, I feel like I've been more undisciplined in the past couple of years since I stopped competing. So I'm not as consistent as I would like to be. Mm-hmm. With that said, the past week or so, we've been very consistent. So wake up, either journal or read. No real guidelines for the journaling, no real guidelines for the reading. It's just kind of relaxing and gets me thinking creatively a little bit. Actually before that. So I hop out of bed and I take a cold shower. And in Santa Cruz, you would think that it can't get that cold. Well, it can. It's just as cold as the mountain runoff in Salt Lake City. So I do one of those for 30 seconds to 2 minutes. I started doing that after listening to something Tony Robbins was talking about with in regards to central nervous system activation, which I'm all about. Get out of the shower, journal or read for, you know, however long. The other morning I was able to read for like an hour, which was amazing. It just set my day up so well. After that, 10 to 20 minutes of meditation of some form. A lot of times I'll use the app called Headspace, free app. I recommend it to literally everyone from, you know, whether you're looking for like stress reduction or increased performance in your sport. I think mindfulness is a great practice for literally anyone. So that's the next step. After that, if I'm solid, I'm going to write a list for the day. And that list is going to be the top three most important things for me to create. So I read a book called Eat That Frog years ago with written by Brian Tracy. And he talks about getting the biggest thing, the most important thing in your life done first thing in the day. And honestly, I'm not in a great habit of getting that done right now, but when I am, I feel more confident. I look back at the day and see it as a productive day, all that kind of stuff. So write those three things down, and then make breakfast, drink coffee, that kind of stuff.
All the coffee.
Yep.
Cool.
Yes.
So our second question to you is, what is something recently that you had a strong belief in and you preached a lot and recently you've changed your mind on? So it could be anything.
Oh, man. strong belief. So maybe in regards to squatting in individuals, like for longevity's sake. So, you know, there's always the question for people as they age, should they be squatting? Is it healthy for the body? Is it gonna help you preserve muscle longer? And how is that beneficial? There's that issue in the community. And I've always seen the squat as the best movement, period. And in a lot of ways, I still believe that it is. I think it's because of that eccentric portion of the movement, I think it offers the biggest opportunity for muscle growth. But I think in aging individuals or people that just want to stay healthy, that don't want to compete in anything, it's not necessarily the healthiest overall because of the stress that it puts on the spine and the knees potentially. I'm not throwing out the squat altogether whatsoever. I still think, and I forget who said it. It might have been a podcastee of mine that said this, but he suggested as you get older, as you, you know, move out of like a competitive state, to load the deadlift up. So continue deadlifting heavy as you get older, because there is not nearly as much axial load, and squat for flexibility, right? So higher reps, full depth, probably a high bar because it's not as bad on the spine. But that just really hit home for me, you know, keeping the full range of motion in the hips, knees, and ankles. And loading up the deadlift because you're still, it's still going to activate those high threshold motor units. You're still going to maintain a lot of lean muscle tissue. And it's just a little bit safer, just a little bit. You know, I don't want that to sound black and white. Like, I hate the squat. I love the squat, and especially for athletes. I just think that's just something that's kind of changed for me, belief wise.
I think that's actually from Greg Cook, the guy that made FMS. He always says, like, maintain the squat, train the deadlift.
Mm. Yes, exactly.
That's why I didn't believe in the FMS for so long.
Yeah. Cool. And the last question, what is your favorite quote at this point in time?
Fuck. Favorite quote. I want to say...
You can Google it if you want.
Yeah. It's actually on my... I think it's on my business card. something to the effect like fear will always be there. It's what you do that actually matters. Something to that effect. A big theme in my life for the past couple of years is this feeling of fear, especially as I do things like this podcast or I used to hate social media, and now I'm like all over it, like trying to build the Brute Strength brand, doing all those things that really, really scare me. That's been on the forefront of my mind. I strongly believe that feeling will always be present, no matter how confident I am, no matter how successful I am. It will always be there because I'm doing things that are uncomfortable, right? I'm always going to push the envelope to that next level for, relative to me. But it's just a feeling, and, you know, success, happiness, fulfillment lies right on the other side of that. I just try to not be too afraid of that, too afraid of anything, to take action.
Awesome.
Nice. Okay, so cool. Plug all your shit. Where can people find you personally? Brute Strength, the podcast, all that. What's it all called?
You can find me personally at Michael Cazieux. That's Michael, Cazieux. I'm not very active anywhere personally. Probably won't be until someone else takes over the social media for Brute. But you should definitely check out at Brute.strength on Instagram, at @brutestrength_ on Twitter. Let's see. Check out the Brute Strength podcast on iTunes, or you can go to our website, www.brutestrengthtraining.com. Go ahead, sign up for our newsletter. A lot of good shit in there. Then if you're interested in CrossFit, go check out our program. See what we offer. And within the month, we're going to launch something called Brute Body. And that is for people that just want to get stronger, move better, and look better. Our competitive programs, I think, are incredible. And if you want to compete, they're the best out there. But I think there are more people with other goals than there are people with the goal to compete. And that's what Brute Body is going to be about.
Yeah, nice.
And there will be a men and women's version of that.
Oh, okay. So
are you looking at Lachlan or looking at me?
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for being on. You forgot to plug your podcast. It's the Brute Strength Podcast.
Good episode with Hinchel.
And great episode with Pat Barber as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Good thing about coaching.
We'll be doing another one with Henshaw soon.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, hopefully. Look, if you're ever in Australia, I know Tommy's been out here for some seminars or whatever. You're welcome to come to our gym and host there, because we're 8 minutes from the airport, so we could do a face-to-face podcast.
I think my girlfriend and I might move out there for a few months in the fall, which will be your spring.
Oh, that's really soon. I think we
might move out there. Yeah.
Oh, for what city? Sydney? Melbourne?
In like 6 months. We don't know yet.
All right. Well, Sydney's the only good city.
Let you know, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, dude. We appreciate
you. I'll have to talk to Benny Gerard, see what he thinks.
Oh, he's in Sydney. He's in Sydney.
Oh, cool. Good. Yeah, sweet. Yeah, that's my boy.
All right. Cool, man.
Thanks, mate.
So much,
thanks for being on.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. That was sick.